Thank you for listening to this lesson. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to
Good morning. So, you know, it's always good for me to get away to just be able to read and study and contemplate without, you know, thinking about having to write a creative Sunday lesson. And, you know, Pam and I were on one of her work cruises. Is that an oxymoron? A work cruise? Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. And, you know, it's fascinating to those who love to take cruises. That's the one place where all nations come together just to have a good time. You know, you hear every language being spoken, every culture, and everybody is happy. So maybe we just need to build a whole bunch of cruise ships and everybody just live on cruise ships. You know? But, you know, I had a chance to do a lot of reading and thinking about this whole spiritual journey that we're on. And like I said, you know, I'm one that always wants to know the mechanics of it. You know, what's the dynamics happening behind the dynamics that are moving us along this spiritual path, and always realizing that where we are is nowhere near where we need to be. And the struggle is we can't, with our intellect, comprehend where we need to be. Is that, did you get what I'm saying? You know, we have languages and ideas and thoughts that we use to try to get us there, but it really is a process that we have to go through. It's the sort of thing I've been playing with lately, that there's a difference between an intellectual or an intellect, or intellect and wisdom. You know, especially at the college, you know, there's lots of people with their PhDs, you know, means they've gained a lot of knowledge. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have wisdom. It's really when you take that intellectual knowledge that you're gaining and you implement it in life, you know, going through the life experience, that it begins to transform into wisdom. Does that make you feel I'm getting, you know? So it's sort of a process we go through. So it's incredible that today's thing was on faith, because we're going to talk about faith. And I think the title is called Living by Faith. Is that what it is in your bulletin? They make up titles and they just tell me to figure out something to say to it. But, you know, it's amazing, you know, how so often life brings us back to basics in different parts of our life experience. You know, we become so entrenched and intrigued with the unlimited choices of the material life that we lose consciousness of the deeper, more profound, rewarding, engaging possibilities of just living this simple, prayerful life. You know, if I use the word prayer, not in the formal sense that, you know, we need to be praying, but more as an expression of a way of being in the world. Just think about, you know, that, you know, living your life as a prayer. So that's what I'm talking about, living your life as a prayer. Not that the fact you take the time to pray, yet, which is good, but your whole life is a prayer. That's what I'm sort of getting at. You know, it's like it's where you're thinking about prayer, you're speaking prayerfully, you're being in prayer, only asking for and knowing the good of God in your life and the life of others. So you have to almost substitute all the other things we think about with just the process of being in prayer. And it's not that you can't ask for things or want things, but once you put it out there, then you kind of go back into a prayerful consciousness, knowing that God knows what you want. God knows what you want even before what? You ask, okay? So it's sort of being that mind. And the affirmation I pulled out of the basket when we had the candle lighting service, my affirmation was from 1 Corinthians 14:40, let all things be done decently and in order. I love that. That all things be done decently and in order. Because in our wanting, we want it to happen when? Now. And the world, that the technology gives us the ability to do everything, experience everything now. You know, so it's sort of like when we ask, we want things done now. But I like that. Let all things be done decently and in order. It's some movie Pam and I were watching in, I can't remember what it was. And it was a subway train, New York City, crowded, people trying to get to work. It's crazy. You know, it's, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. And the subway train stops in the tunnel. So, you know, everybody's mind, oh, man, it's time. I got a meeting to get to, blah, blah. So the conductor says, let me tell you a story. I know many of you are frustrated because the train has stopped in a tunnel and you got busy schedules and places to go. He said, but a friend of mine was, coming to work, and the train stopped in a tunnel just like this for a long time, like an hour. And the key here was that if the train had not stopped and he had got to work on time, he would have been in that building when it was hit by that plane. And basically a conductor would say, wherever you are, that's where you need to be. Isn't that powerful? In that moment, you know? So let all things be done decently and in order. And in the affirmation that was on my little slip said, God is first in my life and is revealing to me the orderly process of my life. I love that. God is first in my life and revealing to me the orderly process of my life. And I have that right by my bed. And Pam can tell you, every night before I go to bed, I read it. So that's what I'm thinking about and dreaming about as I go to sleep. You know? And if you think about, you know, the manner in which we have transitions from childhood to adulthood, you know, simple is not always easy. You know, we say, let's live the simple life. Well, it's not always easy. You know, as a child, we live the simple life. You know, you give the child a little thing and it sits there and plays with it for hours, you know. But we've got to have all kinds of toys and things and going on. I got the Samsung watch. I got the Samsung phone. I got the Samsung tablet. They're all talking to each other. I'm going, you know, it's like, you know, I'm saying it's like a thing. We just all, you know, have to have all this information happening at one time. But, you know, we made this transition. You know, for example, I'm just using this as an allegory. So you use a forever means in your life. If you take a simple whole carrot and give it to a child, he or she will simply bite into it and eat it just as it is. It's like our grandchild. She still does this now. And, you know, if I'm cutting up tomatoes or cucumbers or peppers or whatever, she comes and stands there like I'm got chocolate cake. And she just wants the raw pepper, you know, cucumber, right, Pam? Carrot, whatever. You know, I cut up some strawberries last night, and she came and she was staring at them. I said, you know, I was going to make a smoothie, but, you know, a little rum in it, you know, but but I had the strawberries all cut. You know, I had some bananas that were going bad, you know, and they go bad, the strawberries, you know, put them in a blender, and, you know. So anyway, so she's staring at them. I said, you can have as many as you want. She just loaded up a bowl with them and just ate the whole strawberry. You know what I'm saying? Just the simple, you know, life. You know, so, but the child will accept and enjoy the carrot in its original, nutritional, basic form. Now, you give that same carrot to an adult whose taste buds have been titillated, stimulated, maybe even mutilated, right? By all sorts of seasonings and sauces and savory flavors, he or she would slice it, dice it, cook it, bake it, smother it all sides of creamy, smooth, you know, sugary sauce, and until at the end, you don't even know what it is. Right? And again, you can apply that, you know, to whatever aspect of your life. But if that adult has been doing the work to awaken to an understanding of the importance of returning to the basic fundamentals of life that lead to longevity and health, he or she would have discovered the rudimentary value of simply eating the raw carrot. An allegory again for living the simple life. And to many of us, we can't even perceive that. Like, if you've ever been to Alaska, not on a cruise, but were you on the economy? You know what I mean by being on the economy when you go to different places? You're not where the tourists go. You're where the people live, all right? And so when we went there, when the kids were there, they took us, and they were showing us communities where people who lived down here, who had the big houses with all the fancy cars and everything, had simply given all that up and moved up there into log cabins, what they call dry cabins, which means there's not even any water running in those cabins. And if you want to eat, there's no grocery store. The nearest grocery store maybe 200 miles away. So if you want to eat, you got to go out and kill it or grow it. Now, we all going, oh, yeah, that ain't happening. you get what I'm saying? So, you know, we talk about it, and you might want to go, oh, maybe I could live the simple life. And then something inside you goes, oh, yeah, you forget that. I'm not, you know. But that's what we're talking about. How do you get to the simple life? And I'm not, and we're not saying that you have to do that, move to Alaska, to the wilderness, to live the simple life. You get it? You can be in the midst of it. Jesus didn't do that. You know, Jesus, you know, he had a, you know, fine clothing. He ate with the, you know, the best people. But he also hung out with the folks, you know, in the alleys. You know, he lived a lot, but he still stayed very, very simple. So, you know, the key here is that I used the word rudimentary a minute ago. The word rudimentary means a fundamental element, principle, or skill pertaining to a field of learning. All right? So remember years ago, some of you have been here for a while, I used to use the example of Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee, when he first started out, he would say, a kick is a kick, a punch is a punch, a block is a block. There are very specific basics to martial arts that he was learning. But then Bruce Lee became a grandmaster. He became a very proficient martial artist. And then to him, a kick wasn't a kick, a punch wasn't a punch, a block wasn't a block, because he could use them interchangeably however he wanted to. But when he became a grandmaster, to him, a kick became a kick, a punch, and a block is a block. As a master, he went back to the basics. You see what I'm saying? You know, if you think about many of the, even you know, in music and art, whatever, there's a basic structure that you always return to. Like when I'm on these cruises and or trips, I go for the photography. And I'm, you know, when I photograph, though, there's a basic structure of art that I'm following. And I watch people with cell phones. They're just going click, click, click. Click, click, click. You know, and sometimes I look at what they're holding it at, and it's like, I got a phone, it's got it's got a camera, I'm taking a picture. But there is no mindfulness of what is the structure of art when you're doing this, you know? So the key here is that there is always a basics to whatever we're seeking to master. But when we really become masters, we understand coming back to the basics. There's a book titled, and you might have heard of this, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Okay? And how true that just, you know, that just might be, because mastery has its beginning in the challenges of learning and mastering the basics. And so that's what we do here at Unity Center of Light. We keep going back to the basics. Many unities, if you heard me say before, have kind of gotten away from, especially Charles and Myrtle Fillmore's works, because they're very dense. But they're dense in a very basic way. You understand this one? You know, and so there's a tendency a lot of times to go to what's popular as opposed to sticking to the basics. Now, the basics for us is the teachings of Jesus Christ, period. Okay? Now, you will hear me talk about Buddha and Krishna and Maharishi and all, and Paramahansa Yogananda and all these others, but still for us, the basic foundations are those teachings. That's our basics, all right? And so the key here is, how do I keep my focus on what is basic? Now, let me give you the basic tenets in unity that we should keep in the forefront of our mind to demonstrate that we're here to demonstrate the teachings of Jesus. Now, we're not here just to expound, you know, to say, to talk the ideas. But we're here to what? Live the ideas. Okay? That's, again, moving from intellect to wisdom. And live those ideas in our everyday lives. The other thing we believe is that the true church is a state of consciousness that exists as a fundamental basis of the truth that God is within every human being. So the true church is a state of consciousness. Jesus never said build a brick and mortar. He never said build a church. All right, he said, "Is where it is within you." All right, so that's one of our standard beliefs, that the true church is a state of consciousness that exists as the fundamental basics of the truth that God is in every human being. And unity teaches that each person is a unique expression of God, and that we are each sacred and worthy of all that God has imbued us with. And here, that word sacred means we are blessed. Okay? Now, contrary to the normal Christian religious expression, which is we are born in original sin, we've all heard that, right? We believe that everybody is born an original blessing. Everybody with me? All right? But what we do with that blessing is up to each individual. As I heard a TV character say just recently, a life fully lived will have many regrets as well as many joys. So when you look back and you say, oh, I regret that I did, I regret it. Don't get caught up in that. That's where you were at the time, okay? And the purpose here, you know, the purpose of the spiritual path is to be able to decipher the spiritual lessons embedded in the experiences that led to regrets so that we grow more spiritually aware of how to live life prayerfully. Let me say that again. The purpose of the spiritual path is to be able to decipher the spiritual lessons embedded in the experiences that led to regret so that we can grow more spiritually aware of how to live life prayerfully. So from that perspective, that stuff we did which we wish we hadn't done, actually we had to do it at the time that we did it. Because that's where we were, and there were lessons embedded in it that we needed to learn from. But at the time that it was happening, we were not in a state of consciousness where we could perceive those lessons, all right? So when we become open to understanding the purpose of our life lessons, we discover that without God's grace and blessings, things could have been a lot more difficult. Even as you were going through that stuff, God's grace and blessing was right there with you, all right? And if it wasn't, what we thought was bad would have been horrific. Yeah. But because we are born in original blessing, we always had at least a glimmer of faith that got us through. So what I'm saying is, even if you didn't think at the time that I'm being, you know, oh, God, this is going on, but there's a blessing embedded in here someplace. We always had at least a glimmer of faith. You get what I'm saying? Even if you didn't say, well, I don't remember having any faith at that time. You had a glimmer of faith. It was not possible for you to live life without at least a glimmer of faith. Okay? And so, you know, we know that the principal, the disciple Peter, you know, represents faith. And Jesus said to Peter, and I say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Now, so the key here is we got to understand that this idea of faith is something that's actually, it's not something we're trying to get to. It's actually part of the spiritual gift that has been embedded within us. All right, we came with that in us already. And so when Jesus said this, he said, I say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I shall build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The name Peter, or Cephas, in Greek means rock. Okay? So according to the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, rock represents faith in God that is strong, unwavering, and enduring. All right? And this is the faith that is a necessary foundation for building up our spiritual consciousness. And it is our spiritual consciousness, listen carefully, that is the church of Christ within each one of us. Our consciousness is the church within us. All right? Now, referring to the revealing word, the word church is derived from the Greek word meaning the Lord's house. So in essence, all that is going on in our minds is happening where? In the Lord's house. But as a revealing word explains it, we have created, and I love this, groups or aggregations of thought centers within the Lord's house. Did everybody follow me? And so within the Lord's house, we got all these different boxes of stuff going on our heads. All right, aggregations of thoughts. And think about it. If you think right now, you say, yeah, I'm struggling with this issue here, or I'm excited about this issue, I'm not struggling with this. And they're all in little groups in our minds, okay? And this is where all the groups of our joys and the groups of our fears congregate, mulling over what makes us joyful and what makes us fearful. Now, if you think about the fact we got all these little churches going on in our within the Lord's house, all these little aggregations and groups, when Joseph and Mary came to the inn, and that inn said, there is no room in the inn for you. That little group of people in that inn, was whatever they were mulling over, said, no, we don't want wisdom and love coming in here messing up our thing right now. Is that making sense? Right? Because you got to understand that this idea of Joseph and Mary holding the Christ idea, trying to come into these aggregations, is something that's happening continuously. It's a constant process. But are you looking through the little peephole and going, no, I'm sorry, there's no room here for you? Am I just making it up? It's making sense. Okay? All right? So whatever it is you may be busy thinking about or worrying about, just know that an emissary of God is at the door of each thought center for the express purpose of coming in and training that aggregation of thoughts and how to think spiritually. So everything you're worried about, everything, or everything you're joyful, or whatever is happening, there's always that little spiritual idea that's saying, let me give you another way of looking at this. But you have to understand that the way I'm going to give you to look at it is completely different from the way you're looking at it. Okay? So our job in this process is to let go and let God's emissary come in and do its work. It's not for us to figure it out. Whatever's going on, whatever you're struggling with, whatever's happening in your life, is not for you to figure out. It's just for you to let go and let God, okay? So in this regeneration process, and that's what's happening, so the degeneration process is all the stuff we go through that we worry about that causes fear and anxiety. That's the degeneration. You are degenerating not only your mind, but your whole being is degenerating when you're worried and fearful about something, okay? Regeneration is what's constantly going on in your body. That's why we're still here. You get me? That's why we're still sitting here, because regeneration is constantly going on. This is a little bit on the side, but one of the seniors that are on our trip was 94 years old, and you would not have known it. 94 years old, full of energy, got around by herself, did her thing. You know, he kept saying, what's her name? Alvita. Kept saying, Alvita, do you know? No, I don't need nothing. I'm good. Right? So something in her life is causing regeneration. But that's what I'm talking about. So the regeneration process, in this process, you know that spiritual knowledge is not something that we must struggle to acquire, but faith is not something we need to struggle to acquire. That's what I want you to understand. Rather, it is something that already exists within us to which we must awaken. So we cannot become more or have more. You know, when you get a computer, it's programmed already, right? You don't have to put that into it because it's already in there. The operating system is already in there. Am I right? So when we were born in original blessing, the whole operating system that God is was already installed. We just have to figure out how to access it. All right? So that's the other end. So it is with our original blessing. We were born with this blessing already implanted in our psyche, within our body consciousness, within our spiritual will is working to make us aware of it. So we have a spiritual will that's constantly moving through our system. We know biologically there's things miraculously happening in our body even as we're sitting here listening. Right? Okay? All these miracles are just constantly going on, keeping us moving and going no matter what we do. So the same thing you have to understand, your spiritual will is always working, trying to make you aware of the presence of God within you. So Jesus spoke to this knowing in John 5:17. He said, my Father is working until now, and I am myself am working. You've heard that verse before, but does it make more sense now? It's saying my Father is always working. That spiritual will is always working, trying to awaken you to the greatness that you are, you know. And Jesus said, and I am working. That's the part we're missing. You with me? That's the part we're missing. I have to realize I have to do my work while God is doing God's work. Okay? And so when Jesus said to Peter, on this rock I build my church, he was also saying, on your nature, which means, you know, on your name, rather, means which means on your nature I will build my church. Peter's nature was faith. And yes, Peter's faith could be a little shaky at times, but he always came back to faith because it was his nature. That's something to think about. Do you come back to faith, you know, when your life becomes disturbing, or do you come back to fear? Whichever you find yourself coming back to, you have to realize that's my nature. But we can do what? We can change our nature, okay? And as we discussed before, we each build our own inner sanctuaries, our own inner retreat centers, our own inner churches. The question we each must ask ourselves is, what is the nature of your self-made inner church? Is it made of faith and love and strength and wisdom? Or is your inner church made of worry and fear and hatred and jealousy and quick, you know, blame and condemnation? What is your inner church made of? Okay? And Jesus understood the building process conducted by the ego. So with the calling of each disciple, he was calling into service a person who metaphysically or symbolically represented a spiritual power he wanted to awaken within himself. So when he said, Peter, come into service with me, he was saying, I need you to help me to wake up to my own spiritual center. Even though Peter didn't realize it. All right? And Peter represented the potential for faith. So by stimulating and activating Peter's faith, Jesus was simultaneously expanding the faith consciousness within himself. All right? So metaphysically, by calling Peter into his service, this symbolizes Jesus calling forth faith to help prepare him for what he was about to encounter in his ministry. He said, I'm getting ready to go into the ministry. I got to get myself ready for this. Oh, that just reminded me. How many people are watching the series on Netflix, The Messiah? Oh, my God, is it incredible. If you are not watching The Messiah, you've got to go to Netflix. It's the whole idea of, you know, Christians are waiting for Jesus to come back. And I always said, if Jesus come back, they would arrest him. And they did. The CIA, the FBI, the NSA, everybody was all over his case. And not having a clue. It was sort of like, I can't think of the name of the book where St. Francis was trying to get to the Sultan of the Muslims to stop the fight between the Christians and the Muslims. But every time he got captured by the enemy was so intrigued with him that they wanted to keep him away from the Sultan. They said, this man is so full of love that if we get him to the Sultan, he's gonna get to the Sultan. The Sultan's not gonna be able to, you know, he's gonna be able to do whatever he tells him to. Well, it's the same thing with this the Messiah. Every time the FBI or CIA get with him, they just leave like blown away. They sent a prostitute to him to try to get, you know, and the FBI was watching. What he did with that prostitute to change her life had the FBI guy crying. You got to watch this movie. It's 10 episodes, I think. Huh? I'm not gonna tell any more pro story. Yeah, it's just so mind blowing. But anyway, it's called The Messiah. It's on Netflix. So where was I anyway? Right. So the idea was, you know, the key that people come into our lives to help awaken within us our own spiritual centers, okay? And, you know, and you call forth faith, you know, you have to say, am I calling forth faith or am I calling forth fear? Am I calling forth love? Am I calling forth condemnation? So if you say, man, this person really, you know, it hurt me or getting on my nerves or whatever you're saying, that means you have called forth fear. If the person comes to your life, no matter what they do, you can behold the Christ in them and behold the Christ in yourself, then you're calling forth love. So you have to ask yourself, what am I calling forth? So even though Peter had his times of doubt, he still demonstrated for Jesus the potential ability to perceive the truth within himself. Okay, now, just like when Jesus asked the question, well, who do men say that I am? Okay. Well, even though Peter was not previously aware of the answer, He knew that what he heard flow from within himself was the answer that Jesus was asking for. So it's the same with any one of us. You ever had something, a counter in your life, where you were presented with something and you didn't know what to say, but all of a sudden you felt what to say percolate up inside of you? It's the same exact thing, okay? So when he answered Jesus by saying, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God," Jesus said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven." And when Jesus used the phrase, "my Father in heaven," he was referring to the church, the Lord's house, within the consciousness of Peter. So he said, "my Father in heaven." He wasn't saying God up here said this to Peter. He was saying God in here, in Peter's own church, within him, gave him the answer. Now, that's powerful to know because we all have that church within us, okay? And Peter had built his inner church out of the substance of faith, and you could tell by the way Peter exclaimed with confidence. He didn't say, "well, I think." He said with confidence, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Peter did not mumble. He knew what he had heard from his heart of hearts, and he proclaimed it with unwavering confidence in what he had to say. So Jesus acknowledged Peter's faith as the foundation or the rock upon which the church, the Lord's house, located within Peter's own consciousness, is to be built. And it is the same with each one of us. We too have heard God's guidance, direction, and inspiration as to how to build our own inner church. And we do that by learning how to just be still and listen. Okay? You don't get it out of books. You don't get it from your minister. You don't get it from your guru. You don't get it from any of those sources. It comes from right within you. And being still and listening is a very powerful practice to follow when one is striving to live the prayerful life. Now, think about it. When you are confronted by life's challenges, for example, more bills and money, or problems at work or school, or problems in your relationship, problems in your physical body and so on, do you proclaim the problem as the rock upon which you're going to build your inner church? Or do you proclaim a spiritual principle such as faith to be the rock upon which you're going to build the house of God within you? Is that, you get it? So, you know, if we look at us, you know, you guys are incredible. Did you know you're incredible? You're incredible. You know, we told you, what was it, September or so, that we were $30,000+ in the red. And we let you know that. And we had absolute faith. Maxine and I were talking one day, you know, saying, it's going to be okay. And you guys helped us in the year $7,500 in the black. So, Unity Center of Light is built on what rock? The rock of faith. And that, you know, when Patty was telling me about all of the wonderful donations that were coming in, I said to her, "you know what that is? That's a proclamation that Unity Center of Light is supposed to keep doing what it's doing." You know? Yeah. So, you know, the idea here, you want to always ask yourself, what am I building my Lord's church on, you know, within myself? You know, you say that if it's fear or anger that I'm, you know, I'm building my church on, I need to change the construction materials I'm using. You know, I mean, if you want to change it to love and faith and so forth. So, and it's written in 2 Samuel 23:31. This is God. His way is perfect. The promise of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all who take refuge in him. For who is God but the Lord? And who is a rock except God? Now, you know, we look at things metaphysically, but, you know, I come from a Baptist background. So when I read things like that, it hits my Baptist roots, right, Joe? You know, it's my Baptist roots as well as my metaphysical roots. You know, this is God. His way is perfect. The promise of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all who take refuge in him. For who is God but the Lord, and who is a rock except our God? Okay? And when you are aware of the power and presence of God in the situations in your life, it is so much easier to choose the rock of faith instead of crystallizing your negative thinking into a rock of fear. But if you do not know in your heart that the Holy Spirit is always with you, you will build your life on the rock of crystallized, fearful, hateful, unforgiving, negative thinking. So that's why the key of knowing is so important. Because now, as you know, you catch yourself, whoa, what? No, that's not what I want to do. How many people have done that lately? Have to find yourself, no, that's not what I want to do. I'm raising my hand. You know, I'm working with it all the time. I'm saying, it's like Pam will say to me sometimes, that's not what you teach. But I will say to myself a lot of times, you know, I will say to myself the same thing a lot of times, wait a minute, that's not what I'm studying. That's not what I'm trying to understand. Now, I get so caught up in that, not sort of like an argument or a commentary within myself, that I lose the strength of or the energy of whatever it is I was struggling with. Does that make sense? So I get wrapped up in the commentary. No, this is not what you just read. You understand. You follow this, and this other thing just goes away. All right? So you got to find your own mechanism for making those changes. So even though the rock of fear is not as strong as the rock of faith, it is still a hard rock to break. Okay? But as it says in Scripture, you do not have to have a lot of faith to overcome your fear. Because the Scripture says, faith, you only need faith the size of what? A mustard seed. Okay? So turn your focus from the fear and place your faith in God. Have faith in God. Have faith in good. Have faith in the light. And so it is. Amen. Wow.